Stand by. We are about to begin. Good day and welcome to today's VEV2 Security IBM conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn things over to your speaker, Ms. Barbara Smith. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. This presentation is part of the IBM Virtualization Engine Deep Dive Education Sessions. This presentation is entitled VEV2 Security. I am Barb Smith, the presenter. There will be a Q&A call in early October, so please send your questions to Madeline, Nick, Maddie at us.ibm.com by October 1st. I have to apologize up front, too. I have a bit of a cold, so hopefully I will come through clearly. So we are going to be discussing the VE Single Sign-On education information for the VEV2 release. The agenda topics that we'll be covering are give an overview of what VE Single Sign-On is intended to do, some install information about how you would install the support, the Single Sign-On configuration information, how to get it set up for use, and then what type of runtime processing is done to actually use the Single Sign-On support. And then at the end, there's a bunch of foils that kind of give a detailed configuration information about where things are stored and how they're stored. What we intended with the VESSO project to deliver was we're trying to get a way to get an integrated, consistent security for the VE console. And we're providing an extensible single sign-on architecture that includes a VE console-based management GUI interface for setting up a single sign-on architecture. What we're intending to do with single sign-on is that when you're, as a VE console user, you sign on to the VE console once, and then if you start launching other applications from the VE console, you should not be prompted for another user ID and password to get access to that application or system. So some of the goals that we're trying to accomplish are to lessen the cost of managing security in the VE environment. We're also trying to exploit the security that customers have already set up on their existing systems. We're not trying to replace any access control type mechanisms on a system, and then put in place infrastructure that can be built upon for future releases of VE. Again, then what we're not trying to do is provide a whole enterprise security management environment or try to develop an all-encompassing VE security environment for all the different platforms. So again, we're trying to exploit what's already in place so that for existing systems from a security standpoint so that they don't have to redo all of their access control information on their systems. And what we're trying to do is lessen the cost of managing the user interfaces or the user access to the system. We're providing a centralized interface for caching user IDs and passwords that are necessary for accessing other applications or systems. And then we're providing implementation of, and then I call it an identity context reference that can be used by applications that then does not require a cache password. To use the identity context reference, the underlying authentication interfaces have to be enhanced to support using an identity context reference as opposed to a user ID and password. The VEA single sign-on support is actually part of the VE base. It's automatically installed whenever you install any VE support, so you really cannot select to install or uninstall this support. If you have any other questions on the installation process, you can refer to the installation presentation that's part of this group of presentations. VE single sign-on support is used by the WAS-based applications like the VE console and the console bridges to authenticate to applications that they need to access that are running outside of WAS. When these applications are installed, they are automatically configured and set up to be using single sign-on support. And what that means, and we'll get into that later on in the presentation is that they will be using these JCA connectors, and they'll be configured to use the JCA connectors and the JAS mapping modules that will be using or implementing the single sign-on support. So they're set up to be using that, but there's also configuration that needs to be done before this, before the JAS mapping module and all of that can do their mappings and find the correct credentials. So there is a configuration set up that needs to be done by the customer before the single sign-on support can be used. Some of the things that we need to do to implement the single sign-on is we need repositories for storing single sign-on information. We use the global configuration repository, which has been covered in other presentations, and we use the IMR, which is the Identity Mapping Repository. You also need then to set up, you need to associate your VE console users with users on the target systems that you are going to be accessing. The mapping lookup code that runs in the JAS mapping module needs to determine if the cache password is required by the application that's being accessed or if they do support identity context references. And the GUI, the SSO GUI, also needs to know all of the systems that are participating in SSO so that all of these associations can be set up. And they also need to determine whether a cache password needs to be established for the user on the target system so that they make sure that they ask for that within the GUI. We also have some special processing for EWLM and RDS that we will go into later on in the presentation. So some of the basic setups needed to be using SSO is we need all the target systems participating in SSO need to be configured. This is handled in multiple ways. Some of these are configured during install. Some of them are configured through configuration of other applications. And some of them can be set up using the SSO GUI. Target applications that are participating in SSO should be registered. It's not a strict requirement because they can use default settings, but it does work best if they do register themselves. We need to enroll the eConsole users to participate in SSO. That is done using the SSO GUI. And then we need to associate target users on target systems with the eConsole users. And again, that is done through the GUI. And then again, if the target application requires a password, that is set up through the GUI if they don't support the identity context references. I'm on chart number 9 now. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to indicate the chart number that I'm on. The different players in the configuration of SSO are install, configuration of applications, the GUI interface, and then there's some command interfaces. So on chart 10, during the install processing, Common Runtime has an install interview that they do that helps, that collects information that is needed for the SSO configuration. And I believe there's another presentation that Common Runtime has given that gives kind of the details of that. They collect information about the GCR repository, and that basically is an LDAP repository, so they collect the information of where the server is and the connect information. They also do the same thing for the IMR information. They collect the host and port and connect information on that. Then also as part of that Common Runtime install, the SSO code is called and we register in the GCR default configuration information for each of the applications that we are aware of. We create an IMR domain if you have a new VE installation and are indicating that you're using a new IMR repository, we create that repository. And just as a side note, and I don't know how many of this audience are aware of Enterprise Identity Mapping or EIM, but the IMR repository that we're using is really based on EIM, and so when we talk about creating an IMR domain, we're actually creating an EIM domain. The other thing we have to do is make sure we set up some configuration information on this domain that we create. One of the things that we need to do is make sure we support policy associations because those are used by EWLM. Then we also create the registries that represent the VE console users. And then as part of this, because in release one of VE, Management Central did some of this setup for their purposes. So we checked to see if there's an existing registry for the VE console users that had already been set up in release one for Management Central. And then we also set up for autonomic applications. And autonomic is the same as what we call application associations when you're in the SSO GUI. And these are used by RDS. And when we talk about autonomic associations or application associations, we use those because RDS is running and they're doing collection, and they're running really on behalf of the application and not on behalf of the VE console user. And so we do some special processing and setup for those types of associations. So during the install processing, there's a couple of things that can be done. There's a post-install Java bean that we have created that can be called as part of the install processing by the applications that are installed through the suite installer. What we will do then is we'll register the application information for that system that you're installing on in the GCRs, and then we'll also create the target registry for that system, and that gets created in the IMR. The current users that we are aware of that use this post-install Java bean are Management Central Bridge, but they actually use it on behalf of Management Central Server, and then eCare also uses the post-install Java bean. The other information that we have is the VESSO command script is another way that you can register SSO information for an application or a system, and that command is called by Director Bridge on behalf of the Director Server when they do their configuration. My place a little bit. Okay. Chart number 12, configuration. RDS and EWLM have special processing, and they get their single sign-on information set up when they actually do their configuration setup. So RDS, when they are doing their credential processing in their GUI, they have an interface into our SSO GUI that allows them to call into the GUI and get the setup done for their application associations. And so what that processing does is it ends up registering the application instance in the GCR, configures and sets up the target IMR registry. It also then creates as they get into the GUI, then the customer determines who the user is that they're going to run as and the password. So then the target association is set up for the target registries for that application. So that indicates when RDS is running on this system, this is the user they're going to run as. And then we add some additional information that indicates the target host, the target app, and the target port for that association, since there can be multiple instances of applications that RDS is trying to contact on a certain system. There could be multiple instances they're trying to access, and they could be different usernames. And so therefore, we differentiate between them by indicating the host and the port that that application will be using, so that we can have two different usernames for the same system, but they would be for a different application. EWLM has special processing because they have, when they do their create their domain managers, they actually generate a specific user ID and password that needs to be used to access that domain manager. And so we have special processing we provided for them. Then again, we register the application instance in the GCR. We set up the target IMR registry. And then what we do in that case is, because that same user ID and password needs to be used by all the eCouncil users, we set up a what's called a default registry policy association for that user to the target registry, so that all the eCouncil users use that same, end up using that same user, instead of each eCouncil user having a separate user ID that they would access when accessing that EWM domain manager. Now on chart number 13, we'll get into talking about what the SSO GUI provides. The SSO GUI, the main paths into the GUI is there's a welcome portlet, then there's a specific SSO welcome portlet, there's a configuration portlet that allows you to change the IMR configuration information. There's managing user associations, which are the associations from VE console users to users on target systems. And then there's managing application associations, which would be the special autonomic associations for RDS. Then there's an authentication failure portlet that we will discuss when we actually get to that screen. This is the main welcome portlet for the VE console. And what we try to indicate on there in the first bullet is whether or not single sign-in configuration has been set up for this VE console user. And so what we do underneath the covers is check to see if there are associations for this VE console user to all the management sources that this user may be trying to contact. And if we find that they are set up, and then we also verify that there's a password associated with that association. So if we find that that looks to be set up correctly, you'll get the green check that says, yep, everything looks to be set up. If not, you'll get the red check mark, and that would be an indication to you that you'd need to go in and do some more setup before you can start using the applications on the VE console. Uh-oh. I have the wrong foil in the next one. Yes, it's a welcome portlet. I'll have to fix that up for the next one. But the SSO welcome portlet is supposed to show the tasks that you can do for SSO. And there are three available tasks. There's manage user associations, manage application associations, and the configuration information. If you are a VE administrator, you would see all of these tasks. If you are a VE user, you would only see manage user associations. And then really what you can do within there is you can view information, and then you can actually set your password for your target association. So, and some of the details about the SSO welcome panel, it's the main page for the single sign-on information. As I already said, the administrators can do everything on this portlet. And the VE users would not be able to do any of creating new associations or edit existing associations to change users. And basically what they can just do is set passwords. And they can then do the user identity associations, which are the VE console associations. And again, as we talked about, they have default and specific user associations. Or they can manage the application associations, which are the RDS associations, and set the configuration. So we'll go into each of those individual panels. Well, now I've got the darn welcome console. I guess I didn't copy and paste very well. The configuration portlet would show, this is panel number 7, or screen number 17, would show all the IMR configuration information, so it would show the host and the port and the bind information, and that would allow them to, if they want to change which server they're going to use, they can change that. If they need to reset the password that they're using to connect to that server because the password's been reset on an LDAP, they can reset it from that panel. There's a verify button on this panel that allows you to verify that the connection information is correct and you can actually get to that server. Again, only the administrators can modify this information. And VE users would be able to get in and at least browse the information, but they would not be able to change it. This information was initially set up during the Common Runtime Install interview that we discussed a few panels back, and then this panel allows you to change anything that needs to be changed after the install. All right, I finally got the right panel on this one. Manage user associations. This is the initial screen you would see that would have the big one. Yeah. I lost my place again. That's okay. All right. So when you initially come into this screen the very first time you do single sign-on management, you would actually not see any information on the screen. And so then what you'll see on the screen now is obviously things have been set up for some users. So the information you see on here is you'll see the VE console user that you're dealing with. You'll see the system that you're trying to connect to. The type indicates the type of system, the operating type of the system that you're connecting to. The password field or column indicates whether or not a password is required to connect to that system, which means that you're probably not using IBM Director to connect to that system. And then the system user indicates what target user will be used to connect on that system. Again, the administrators can manage the associations on this panel. The users wouldn't see this panel at all, or they would see this.
Okay. VE
users would see this panel, but then they would have the only thing they can do is update passwords for these associations, and they'd have to be for their own users. So if you were to come in as a clean slate, starting fresh, the first thing you would want to do is the first thing you would need to do, of course, is then to create an initial association, which would be the next panel. So on there, you would select which system you want to be connecting to, and then the system user that you are going to connect as. And then you would add them to the table, and then you can add multiple entries to the table, and then when you click OK, that would create your associations at that point. You can only create one association for a system selected, to say one user can, for one target user per system. Otherwise, we end up with ambiguous results, which messes up the mapping processing. And then if the applications running on that system indicate that they need to have a password, then you would also have to then end up caching a password for this association after it's been added. So now if you need to select which system you're going to, if you don't know for sure what systems you have available, then you would click the select button next to the system prompt, and you would end up on this Browse Systems panel, which shows you all the systems that have been currently configured to work in SSO. And these are the ones that have been configured either because of install processing that's been done or configuration that's been done for applications. If you don't see the system that you're looking for on here, you would then select the new button so that you could add an additional system into to participate in SSO. And that would be the next panel that comes up. And there you can select the system. And the port field on here, there's two types of system registries that we're dealing with for SSO. You can either have a system registry, which indicates that you're using the system, the set of system users defined for the system. And in some cases, the application, for example, like EWLM, may be using its own application registry that has an independent set of users that aren't the system registry users. And in that case, you would need to specify the port so we know which port you are using, or the host and the port that you're using for your authentication. Then they would indicate which type of system it is, whether it's i5, AIX, Linux, Windows. Then in the bottom, they can select which applications run on that system. And that's an optional step that they can take, and then what would happen is by defining the system information, we actually configure the system to participate in SSO. And then if they select applications at the bottom, then we will actually register those applications for that, for being run on that system. So that's kind of the basics for the user application associations. This is the next panel, number 22, indicates which property, that if you select properties for a specific association from the Manage User Associations panel, you would then get the detailed information that you had seen from the list, and then this is where you would actually select to change or set the password for that association. And from the manage screen, you can select multiple entries, and then you can select to set the password for all of those entries with at one time if they all have the same password. Okay, manage application associations, panel number 23. These are the RDS specific associations. And what they are used for then is for when RDS is running in their collection environment, these are the associations that would be used to connect to the systems that they are doing their collection from. These associations, they should already be set up for the user when RDS does their credential processing. And so there shouldn't be a need for users to come in here and add or even change the system username necessarily. The only thing they probably should have to do from here is to change the password if the password for that user has changed on the system. The e-administrators are the only ones that can modify these associations. The e-users actually will not even be able to see these associations. They will not get that option on the SSO welcome panel. And then this is panel number 24 is the application association properties, which shows you the properties for that specific application or association and allows you to change the password. It'll indicate whether or not a password is required. Currently right now for all of these types of associations, the password is always required. No, that's not necessarily true. Unless they're doing a collector to directory, then they may not require a password. The authentication failure portlet is something that when you're in the middle of doing a run, you're in the runtime environment, and you're actually trying to access from the VE console another application outside the VE console, and there's some problem that occurs in that process at pretty much at any point, I think, this portlet will come up. And the portlet will try to diagnose the error to see if it's a fixable error. For example, it might be that there's an association that's missing to that target system for this VE console user. Or some of the configuration information may have changed for, like, accessing the IMR or the GCR or something. So if it's something that is fixable on the fly, this some of these buttons will show up, such like the update association, which would allow you to specify an association, or maybe the password changed, and so you can change the password for that association. Not everything is fixable, so there may not be buttons necessarily that will take you to some place that can fix them. But this is kind of done because there's a lot of cases where the target systems are not really set up to be configured through install, and so this gives them an option to, you know, as they start accessing the systems, to kind of add things that are needed for the SSO on the fly. And then they're supposed to go back and then retry the operation after it's been hopefully successfully fixed up. Not all the eConsul functions do support this. As far as we know, Health Center and the Virtualization Engine Updates, which is eCare, do support it. We're still looking at whether RDS and Launch and Context will be able to support this or not. So that pretty much covers what the function of the SSO GUI is. Now we'll talk on panel 26, we'll talk about some of the configuration command support we have. We have a VESSO config command script. It does a lot of the, it provides pretty much any of the configuration setup information you'd need, except doing the actual associations from the target, for the target users. The only way to set those up is through the SSO GUI. So some of the actions the command can do is it can set, view, or remove default settings for an application, or instance-specific information for an application. The default settings are kind of a global, for this application, here's kind of default, you know, what I can do. And then the instance stuff is on a system-by-system basis as that application gets registered on that system. You can set up, configure or remove your IMR registries for a system. You can set up and remove the additional information that's associated with the mapping operation. There's two types of additional information. One that gets stored in the GCR, which indicates when I do a mapping lookup, this is the additional information that I want to specify. And then there's the next step, which actually will set up the information, the additional information on an actual target user, so that when we do the mapping lookup and specify the mapping, the additional info, it's actually found on the target user. And then there's also the options to set and view the identity context and authentication context timeout values. The default setting is 3,600 seconds, and this can then be changed through the SSO config command. And what that does is if you're using the identity context references, that timeout indicates how long that those are good and can be used to do authentication. Hopefully you shouldn't need more than the default timeout. Well, that's the max timeout as well. The command exists in the slash bin directory for the VE install. So when we actually, that pretty much covers how all the information gets configured and the steps that it needs to go through to actually set up SSO configuration. Now starting on panel number 27, we'll talk about how that configured information is actually used during runtime. So the two major players in the mapping lookup during runtime are, you have your applications that are configured to use a resource adapter, JCA connector, which is configured to use the SSO-specific JAS mapping module. And then we have some special processing done that if you're using identity context references, we do some special processing there. And part of that processing involves a VE SSO enabler servlet, which is a servlet running within the VE environment. And the servlet gets deployed when the VE console is deployed or when the WAS common profile is deployed. Now on to panel number 28, JAS mapping module. As I said on the previous panel, the WAS-based applications like the VE console and the bridges that need to access resources outside of WAS use the JCA connector to obtain the credentials needed to connect to the other resource. And then this JCA connector then is configured to use the specific SSO JAS mapping modules that will then obtain the credentials for them. Some applications use the JCA connector to actually do the connection to the other resource, but most of these applications really just use it to obtain the credentials, and then they have their own connection mechanism that they use. The JAS mapping module uses all of that SSO configuration information that was set up previously to obtain the necessary credentials. So what it gets passed by the calling application is the source application ID and the target application ID, which target app they're going to, and then the host name that they're trying to connect to and the port. And then they have this autonomic indicator, which indicates whether or not they are using the application associations, so that indicator is only set by RDF. So the target application ID is kind of the key, because that indicates then when you're connecting to that target application, it indicates whether or not that target application needs a user ID and password, or whether it supports the identity context references. So panel 29, the first thing it does, the JAS mapping module does, is retrieves the configuration information for the target application. And what it looks in the GCR, first for the specific information for that target host. If it doesn't find specific information, then it goes and it looks for the default information for that application, independent of which system they're on. And if we don't find any default, then we use our system-defined defaults, which would be user ID password for authentication methods, and system for the SSO registry type. So then given what the instance-specific information or the default information or the default for the system, it determines what authentication method is used by the target application. The one value user indicates it needs a user ID and password. Identity context says that it supports identity context references. And the advantage to identity context references is it allows authentication without having to cache a password. And again, the only application that currently supports this method is IBM Director Server 5.1. Then the next thing it does is determines which registry type the application is using. Most applications are using the system, which means that they're using the users in the system defined registry for their as their target users. And when we use system, all we need to know is the target system we're connecting to. We don't need the host or the port. And then the other option is application, which means that they're using their own application type registry that's not using system-defined users. And then we need the host and the port because there could be more than one of those on a system. And the only application currently using application type registries is EWLM. So then after it collects all the information that it needs about the target user, then it does the lookup to find the target user name. And the information it uses to do the lookup is it uses the vEconsole user's long name as the source user. The source registry is the vEconsole registry that was set up during the common runtime install interview. And when we do the lookups, and we'll go into the aliases a little bit later, but we always use aliases to find the registries that we're looking for, as opposed to actually doing the registry names, because the names, especially if you're talking in an existing environment, the names may not match our predefined values or our expected values. And so we always add these aliases that help us to find the registries we're looking for. And again, we look for the target registry that we're supposed to use for the lookup. And again, if it's system, then we look for an alias by the target host name. If it's application, we look for an alias using the target host and the target port. And then we look in the GCR to see if any additional information was specified for this host, target, app ID, and target port. And there, you could actually define additional info in at multiple layers. The most specific, of course, is for the specific host app and port combination, or you could do set up additional info for the host and the app ID, or then just for the host. And if we find additional information in the GCR, we'll do the lookup using that additional info, and if we don't find a target user for that, then we'll do a lookup without any additional info and an attempt to return the target user at that point. So now, at this point, we should hopefully have the target user that you're going to be connecting with. So then it determines, looks at the authentication method that the target application says it supports. And if it says user, which means it needs the user ID password, then we'll go out and retrieve the cached password for the target user. And then we return the target user ID found in the previous step and the password. As for the credential information, we return that to the JCA connector. If the authentication method indicates identity context, then we do some additional work where we create an authentication, what's called an authentication context. And within there, there's a whole lot of information, including, you know, who the source user or source application and the target application and the target user ID and a lot of information that can be used for auditing purposes. And then we store the authentication context in the IMR, and we generate what's called an identity context reference to that authentication context. And basically what that is a kind of an 8-byte random string that just identifies that authentication context. And the reason we use an 8-byte string is so that we could use the user ID password protocol for passing these around. And so 8-byte passwords are kind of the lowest common denominator. And so then what you end up with is the credential information that gets returned to the JCA connector. There's the user ID. We don't actually return the user ID in the user ID field because it's stored in the authentication context. So we return a special value that's like ** context ref that indicates that what we're really dealing with is an identity context reference. And in the password field is the actual identity context reference. And then that's what gets passed back to the JCA connector, and then they would pass that on to the application that they're trying to call, which in this case would be Director. So on foil number 32, we'll go into some of the details of the identity context reference processing. Excuse me. The server side, which would be the IBM Director server, the processing that's done there is there's this pluggable authentication module protocol that provides a way to authenticate users using a different method other than user ID and password. Now, the protocol itself is only implemented on AIX and Linux. So we have provided a PAM implementation for AIX and Linux that's used by Director. And then IBM Director has, between IBM Director and us, we've written code, Java equivalent code to what the PAM support does for Windows and i5 so that we can support the identity context references on all the known platforms. The basic PAM processing in any of the implementations is it first checks the user ID that comes in, and if it doesn't start with the **, then it just returns and it expects a different either another PAM module or some other implementation to process it, because if it does not start with the **, that indicates it was a real user ID password, and so something else is going to process it. And one of the problems we had with this is IBM Director Server is really running outside of the WAS, and it can be installed on a system where there is no VE installation or setup that's been done. So they have no information about how to get to the GCR or the IMR. And so that's where we use the VESSO enabler servlet, which is running in the VE environment. And so they what they do is they have knowledge of where this servlet is running, and so then they contact the servlet, and what they do is they package up this identity context reference, this 8-byte field that they got in as the password, and there's some encryption and encoding and stuff that goes on, and they send that to the servlet. And then when they get back the authentication context from the servlet, then the PAM module will parse it out to then eventually get the target user that they need to be running as on that system, and then that gets returned back to the caller of the PAM module. Then the client-side processing, which is the VDSSL servlet, they will accept in the packaged identity context reference that was sent from the PAM processing, and they'll unwrap that, and then they'll go out to the IMR and retrieve the authentication context based on that reference, and then they will package up the authentication context the same, doing the same encryption and encoding, and return it back to the caller. And another part of this is because there's encryption and stuff that's going on, we need to have a key or a password that is known by both the servlet and by the PAM module processing. So what happens is that during when IBM Director Bridge is installed, they call this VESSO server config command script. And what that does is it generates the key that's going to be used between the PAM implementation and the servlet. And the command stores this password in the GCR, and it uses the system name that's going to be where the director server is installed. And it also writes this password to a file. And then if the director server is actually running on a different system than the director bridge, this file actually needs to be copied over to the system where the director server is running. And then that, it's kind of like a shared private key then between the PAM implementation and the servlet, so they know how to encrypt and decrypt the data flowing back and forth between them. IBM Director is currently the only user of this PAM support and the servlet, and since, again, they can be installed on systems outside of the VE environment, so they're not being installed, you know, the VESS project gets installed with the suite installer, and Director would not necessarily be installed that way. All of the PAM-related code is actually shipped with Director. So then that includes all the PAM implementation code, which then sucks in things like the identity context reference code and the EIM or IMR code that's needed to parse the data. And then another thing that shipped with Director that would then run on the server side would be the VESSO client config command. And what this command is used for is to update that password in that file. So if you have a password expiration policy or something where you need to change passwords every 90 days, which I guess we have, you can run that command. It'll update the password in the file, and then it'll notify the servlet that, hey, the password changed. So then the servlet updates it in the GCR. AX and Linux implementations of this command, we make use of this curl support for communicating with the servlet, and that support is not available for Windows or i5. So in that case, what we end up doing is we do a print of a URL that it contains all the information, and they paste that into a browser, and then that command actually, from the browser, contacts the servlet and does the update. Some debug information is between the servlet and the PAM stuff, which has to this point been our biggest problem in running is, and these instructions that are in here are really only for Linux and AIX. And again, the PAM implementation uses the syslog capability in AIX and Linux, so the administrator needs to make sure that syslog has been enabled on that system. And once it's been enabled, then they can put the following information in those different files to actually get the messages sent out that will give you the you know, the debug type capability that is needed. This file that I talked about that gets written by the VESSO server config command and then is updated by the VESSO client config. This is the name of the file is VESSO client info.config, and then the file is those four lines on panel number 35 are the four lines of information that are stored in there. You store a PAM version that kind of just indicates to us what version we're on at this point. One of the undocumented features that we've added is that if you add a D to the end of that version, then we will do some extended debug logging, which kind of helps us to determine what kind of problems might be going on between the PAM implementation and the servlet. Then it's also in there is a list of the servlets that are available to communicate with. Again, those get set initially when the VESSO server config command is run. We'll go out and determine where the servlet's been deployed, and we'll put a URL in for each of those. There's potentially a couple places, and so if there's more than one, we'll actually have more than one listed, and they'll be separated by commas. And we kind of loop through and try the first one and then the next one and until we hopefully get a connection. The host ID then is the host name for the system that we're kind of talking back and forth to, and so that it's the system that the director server is running on, and we need to be consistent with the host name between what the servlet's looking for and what the PAM implementation is looking for. So we stick the host ID in the file so we have it available to both places. And then when we actually read that file and send stuff over to the servlet, we actually pass the host ID, and they use the host ID to actually find the password and stuff in the GCR. And again, the client ID is the actual password or key that's used to communicate data between the, or to encrypt the data being passed back and forth between the servlet and the PAM implementation. There's times when that password can get out of sync, and that could happen, like if they rerun the VESSO server config command on a system but then don't copy the file over to the other system or things like that. We found the easiest way to deal with it because the information in there isn't necessarily, it's not persistent data, so it can be replaced. So the easiest way to do that is to delete the file and rerun the command and then get the file back on the system just to get things back in sync. It's also a good way, like for some reason the servlet gets initially set up to be deployed someplace and that deployment goes away and a new one comes in or whatever, so the list of servlets gets out of sync. The easiest way to handle that, again, is to just delete the file and rerun the VESSO server config command. So panel number 36 is just an example of what you would see in the syslog if that extended debugging was turned on by putting that D at the end of the version. And it really gives us all the information about, who we're trying, what we're trying to do, what URL we're trying to contact, what servlet, the keys we're trying to use and things like that, so that we can tell if the two are in sync or not. And then, again, this is the extended debug information you would see from the servlet, and they should match up. And what we do is, if that D was added to the version from the PAM module, we pass that indicator onto the servlet so the servlet knows that it is also supposed to do extended debug logging. So that pretty much covers the runtime processing and how SSO is actually done within when things are running in real time. I'll go through kind of quickly this next set of FOILs. What these contain is kind of the detailed information about where this SSO configuration information is stored in the GCR and the IMR. I'm not going to go through each one of these specifically in detail, but just so that if you're looking for something, something's not quite set right or out of sync and you want to look at the actual GCR, LDAP, directory structure, this is what you would look for. So the first one is the in the VE settings category of the CMR, which initially IMR was called CMR, so that's why we're kind of stuck with the CMR category. It'll have the things for the IMR connection, which would be the host and the port, the EIM domain we're trying to use. The EIM URL is a combination of the host, the port, and the domain name. This value is set and retrieved by the common runtime install interview. It can also be set and retrieved by the SSO GUI from the configuration portlet. And then the SSO utilities that are used during runtime actually retrieve this information to know how to connect to the IMR. Within VE Security, there's, and I haven't really talked much about this one, there's an auto-create setting that when you do the IMR interview during common runtime install, you can indicate whether you want things auto-created or not. Our recommendation, strong recommendation, is that they leave that on. If they don't do the auto-create, then a lot of the registries and such that are needed for the SSO target systems will not get created. And so it's just much better if they just leave it on and let us create the things that are needed for SSO. Again, in the, to be honest, I'm not sure what the VEIMR install attribute does. But, again, those are set during common runtime install, and they can, the auto-create value can be set through the GUI, and then the utilities will retrieve it to know what, whether or not they're supposed to automatically configure information. Also in VE Security, we have some other configuration information. What these values are, the panel number 41, this is where we store the passwords required to like connect to the IMR and to the passwords used between the servlet and the PAM implementation. And we kind of do this, we kind of obfuscated them. I can't say that word today because my mouth is dry. And so we use an A and B entry, and it's based on the host name that you're going to, and then after that value, the value would contain we kind of encrypt the password in our own mechanism to, you know, so that it's obviously not in clear text. But we didn't want, you know, we want to make it obvious that, hey, here's a password that we're storing. Again, these are set up, the IMR password's initially set during common runtime and can be set and changed through the GUI, and then we will retrieve the IMR password when we need to connect to the IMR. The ESSO server config command initially sets the entry for the PAM support, and the client config command can then reset it. This is kind of the information that gets set when you do things like run the VESSO config command to set up the default settings, default authentication information for a application. There's also a version that if we determine that the version changes, we know if we need to re-register default settings and things like that. And so we have config target, which is for your target applications, which would then, they determine your authentication mechanism and what registry type they support. And then the source applications are the ones that determine whether or not they are the autonomic or application type associations. And then the SSO config settings include the instance-specific settings for each application, each target application, which would include the app. So then we include the app ID and the host name so that each system could have different settings. And then this information is set anytime you register an application, whether it's through the install bean or through RDS or EWM configuration or through the VESSO config command. And then this is the additional info that we talked about earlier, where you can send additional info based on the host app or port. This is definitely used for RDS configuration, and it can be set and changed through the VESSO config command. So that kind of finishes what we put into the GCR. Then the next set of foils, starting on panel 45, include information that we store in the IMR, which, again, as I said, IMR is analogous to EIM, if anybody happens to be familiar with EIM. So the main thing that we do one of the main objects that we create is EIM registries. And the registries indicate, you know, represent either the systems or the, you know, the registries that you're going to be using for authentication. Again, we have the source registry for the VE console users. And then we have a source registry that's for the autonomic applications, which would be the RDS application. And then all the target registries, we have target registries that we create differently, whether you indicated if you were doing system registry types or application registry types. This kind of gives you the details of how we create that registry. The name we give it is the /E_source_environment name. So each environment that you, you know, VE environment that you have set up, you have a different source registry. And then the alias that we add on there. And in EIM terms, an alias really is just another name for the registry. And so we could look for it in either way. You know, in either case, we could either look for it by name or look for it by alias. And again, because you could have something set up from release 2, we didn't want to use the names because the names may not match our protocol of how we were going to name them. So all we, what we do is we maybe look for the existing registry and then add our own alias to it, and then we always look for things by the alias name. Then again, as part of the GUI processing, as part of the setup, each VE console user will get an EIM identifier created for it, and that's just kind of their identity within EIM. And again, we check to see if anything had already been set up from release 1 for Management Central purposes. And then the VE console source association, we create an association between the identifier we just created, the VE console source registry, and then the source user's long name. So we may get in the short name, and then we translate that to the long name and use that as the actual source username. And then again, the autonomic source registry we create with a specific name, and there would not be a one of these existing because this is a new concept for release 2, and then we put our specific alias on there. And we also create an identifier for each of the autonomic applications, which again, is RDS is the only one at this time. And so we put in the name would be the EC, and then the source application ID, and then the environment name that they're running in. And then again, we set up an association between the identifier. We just created the VE source registry, and then we use the source application ID for the application. And these are this is created during the common runtime install setup. I probably should have noted this earlier. When I keep talking about these applications IDs, what we've done is assigned each of the applications that are involved in SSO an ID, and it's just an OID value of 1.3.18.something. And so that's just to uniquely identify each application. When you see things in the GUI, you're going to see a nice text name because we've assigned a text name to that application ID. And so you'll see kind of both representations. You'll see the OID value in things like these identifiers, but when you actually look at the applications through the GUI, you'll actually see a nice text description for it instead. All the target registries for the target systems that you'll be accessing, they get created at different places, again, through the install process or the configuration process or the GUI or the command. And we need to check first to see if a registry already exists because they could have an already set up environment again. And so we look and see if they've happened to have an alias for the LDAP DNS host name for that system, and we'll, you know, if we find one, then we'll use that registry and we'll add our own specific aliases to that registry, or we look for aliases we've already set up to see if it has already been created, and if it has, then we don't need to create it. But we always make sure that we add the aliases because they're kind of key to how we do our mapping lookup. And then if we create a new registry, we also make sure we enable policy mapping lookup because of EWOM needing that support. Again, this just talks about on panel 51, what aliases get added. If it's a system type registry, we add two aliases. One for the, there's a generic VEC target for the environment name alias that we add to all the registries, all the target registries, and that's what's used by the GUI to put up his list of all the systems that he knows about that are participating in SSO, and then we add a specific VE DNS host host name, one that identifies that specific host. And when you look in the GUI and you see the system name, that is that value is what gets showed in the GUI. You'll see whatever alias value is assigned to that alias type will be what's shown in the GUI. And then if you have an application type registry instead of a system, we need to differentiate between those, and so we use the port to do that. There's other support that we added in for the application registries that's not actually being used by anybody right now, but it could be that you know, the system, the application registry that you're accessing on a system may not be the registry that's actually doing the authentication of the user, so you may actually be authenticating using a different system than you're actually connecting to. So there's ways the VESSO config command to actually set up that differences and indicate, well, this is the system I'm connecting to, but this is the system I'm authenticating to. So when you go into the GUI, what you'll actually see is the authentication system in the list of systems that you're going to be setting up associations to. Again, we don't have anybody in this at this time that's using that. EWLM is the only application that's even using application registries, and they will always be using the same host and port for authentication and connection. So the application registries, we do similar things as we do the system. We have the generic VEC target environment name alias. We add the VE DNS host name alias, which then would be for the authentication host and port, and then we add the VE application, which is the target host and port. So the GUI shows you the VE DNS host name alias value, and then when we do our lookup, because we know the target host and port we're looking for, we use that to find the correct target registry. And like I said, in the case of EWLM, those alias values for both of those will be the same. And again, additional information can be set up so that if you happen to set up something where you would have two different users that you could connect to for the same system and you want to differentiate from one application to another, which association you want to use, you can set additional info that would then apply to that application when going to that system. We don't really have any support through the GUI to do this. We do this automatically for RDS application or RDS setup, but there's no way through the GUI to really set this up. You can set it up through the command. It's there in case someone needs it, but for the most part, we don't see people using this support very much. And it's just information about how that additional info is used during the lookup. So the information has to be stored in the GCR of what you want to specify in the mapping lookup, and then it also has to be specified, that same additional info would have to be specified on the target user so that it can be found during the mapping lookup. Then we have the basic notices that I believe are included in pretty much everybody's packages, and number 58 is that would be the end of the presentations. I guess we'll open up and see if anybody has any questions at this time.
At this point, we'll open the lines for questions. We ask that you use your mute function when not speaking to cut down on background noise. Please keep in mind the Star 6 feature will not mute your line on today's call. Also, please do not place your line on hold, as doing so may feed music into the entire conference. Please go ahead.
We have no questions then? Okay, anything else then? So do I just sign off now?